Hello, my Slice of Sci-Fi listeners, especially those of you in the Phoenix metro area. It is that time of year again. The Phoenix Film Festival and the International Horror and Sci-Fi Film Festival are right around the corner. Opening night, Thursday, August 12th. And folks who are local during the film festival can now win a pair of flex passes for the festival. Send me an email, summer@sliceofsci-fi.com, with the subject line Horror Sci-Fi Film Festival 2021, and we will have a lucky winner selected on Wednesday, August 11th, end of day, and you will be notified by the film festival how to obtain your passes. You can find information about the festival's location and schedule at phoenixfilmfestival.com or horrorscifi.com. Check those films out. And remember, email me your entry by 4 p.m. Pacific time, Wednesday, August 11th. That's when we're picking a winner. Good luck! Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and as you know, I'm a fan of Shudder, and they are in an annoying habit of putting out too much good stuff all at the same time, so I can't watch it all. And one of those feature films is The Boy Behind the Door, co-written and co-directed by David Charbonnier and Justin Powell, who are with me today to talk about this intense claustrophobic delight of a movie. Hi guys.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for having me. And thank you for all the nice words.
when I enjoy a movie, even when there are parts of it that antagonize me and irritate me so much, but it's part of the plot, so it's there for a reason to annoy me and get me just pulled deeper and deeper into the story, that's a good thing.
Thank you.
So you two co-wrote and co-directed this. How did this story come about? Because this is one of those children's nightmares, or the nightmares of the parents of children who wander around all day and don't come home late or at all.
Yeah, it's it definitely is kind of a thing of nightmares. We really just loved, we bonded as like kids ourselves over like thrillers and horror movies. A lot of those kind of had children in peril in them, not always like the leads, but we kind of always like responded, I think, to them growing up, because that's you know, we were kind of that age at the time that we were watching them. And so we always wanted to recreate that sense and that feeling that we had and kind of insert those kind of characters. And so that's kind of where this came from when we, you know, realized that we wanted to make a movie. And, you know, so we kind of inserted our own themes of like friendship and hope into this really terrifying setting.
David?
No, I agree with all that.
So there was no specific incident or idea spark that got this, but once you guys got going, how was the breakdown of collaborating on creating the script, the story, and then, you know, getting someone to pay to film it?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. I feel like the second half was just, I don't know, it's so hard to figure out how you get a movie made in general. Like, you have to sort of pitch it and convince a group of people that, you know, you can bring this to life or that an audience will respond to it. We still haven't totally figured out how that works. It seems like it's like a game of chance. But Justin and I have, you know, we've known each other our whole lives. We've literally been friends since kindergarten. So we have a really great, not just friendship, but also now like working relationship. We love collaborating together, coming up with stories. You know, we've written a good handful of scripts. This was one, The Gin recently came out. That was another one. Mm-hmm. And we have like a bag full of more. We're still trying to get made, but yeah, it's been a really great process being able to work with, you know, your best friend on something fun like making movies. We try to, you know, keep it fun and enjoy the process.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I guess just to add on to that second part that he answered first was, I just feel like it's 25% is, I don't know, just like coming up with a decent story, and then 75% is just luck and timing is kind of how you get a movie made, is what it's starting to feel like to us. So,
well, this movie is unique from my perspective in that the entire first, I'm guessing, half hour or so is rooted in tension built up from absolute silence. There's this long stretch where not one word is spoken by one human being. It's all eerie, creepy creaks and snaps and little noises, and I never realized how agitating near silence could be, because you know, one boy you know is in peril. One boy is trying to stay out of getting into a worse situation. He's trying to find his friend, trying to save both of them. And there's no dialogue. And it's just looks and sounds. And from a horror fan perspective, someone who is a big fan of suspense and thrillers, that was, I thought, brilliant. How did you come up with, okay, nobody say anything?
We honestly just love stories that are very dialogue light. We feel that, you know, in these scenarios, if they were really happening, you don't normally have, you wouldn't really have characters just like expositing all this, you know, backstory of like, you know, their circumstances and everything all the time. You really just would be in the moment trying to figure out a way to navigate your surroundings and survive. And, you know, we just wanted to put the audience really in Bobby's headspace and make sure that you feel like you're with him the whole time with this cat and mouse chase. And, you know, when you're in this very dangerous game of hide and seek, you really can't make a sound or you're going to give away your location and your toast. So we wanted the audience to just feel that. And so we wanted to, you know, we always knew that we wanted to lean into having a lot of silence where you could just, you're listening in as an audience, just like, okay, is there like a creak that's going to give him away? Or, you know, like, can you hear Kevin in the distance or what's going on? So you just, that was always our goal with this project. So I'm glad that it had the desired effect on you.
It had more than the desired effect, because you're used to having, you know, you're the person creeping around trying to stay silent because they're being hunted. But to have it stretch for so long was, it was irritating in a good way.
Thank but, you.
Yeah. How was it to film some of those? Because some of those shots, there's like very long shots and you see shadows and out of focus action in the background. And it's almost adds to the tension because you can't see what's going on, but neither could Bobby. And I'm like, okay, that was just a nice, nice choice there.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, we had a lot of fun coming up with sort of like the shot list and what we wanted to achieve visually. We worked really close with our DP, Julian, knowing that we wanted to have, you know, really, really long takes with very minimal cutting. When you actually get on set and you have like a lot more restrictions and there are certain, you know, factors with the kids and some of the action, we did have to break up some of those shots a bit more, but we had even longer takes envisioned initially. But we love those sequences that do sort of draw, like you were saying, those are the ones that to us feel the most suspenseful because you're sort of just waiting for something to maybe happen or someone to come around the corner. But yeah, again, you know, we had an amazing DP. So when you have a really strong team behind you, it just makes your job so much easier.
I agree with that.
talk about the set, the location. Were the interiors filmed on location in that house? Because that's was a really, really seemingly remote location.
Yeah, everything was filmed on location. It's actually, believe it or not, it was shot locally here in LA, and it doesn't look like it. There's, it's kind of this area that you wouldn't really, it's not easy to find. And it's actually very hard to shoot at because they have so many like restrictions at that particular location. But yeah, everything was shot pretty much on that property. And we had to a few times kind of redesign certain rooms within the house to kind of seem like they're, you know, like it's an additional floor or a separate area. You know, just credit to our production designer, Ryan Brett Puckett, who was able to really make magic work with very limited resources. So it was a lot of fun to figure out that puzzle, but it was also a little stressful. I don't think anything was, you know, what would be considered a set.
was anything in the script tailored to fit the location once you found it? Because that house, the way the interiors are, seemed so unique. And I couldn't imagine writing that before you actually saw the place.
That's a really good question. The whole script was tailored to the location, actually. So
wow.
We initially, you know, wrote a draft. And then once, at least with our process, you know, we come up with the story and the sequences and we sort of have like a fictional layout in mind. But then, you know, once we found the location, we sort of did a whole new pass and made sure like this sequence fit into this sequence. Cause you know, we are following Bobby so closely from one room to the next. It all just has to connect. And it also really influenced a lot of the sequences that happened. We had to lose some action sequences that we were really excited about. We put in a couple different ones. But yeah, you kind of, at least for us, we sort of start new once we find the location. But it's just part of our process with that.
How long did it take to cast the kids? Because they hit it out of the park, in my opinion.
They hit it out of the park in our opinion too. You know, going into this, that was always one of the things we were most terrified of, was how do you find two kids that are going to be able to carry such, you know, adult material, like totally on their shoulders. And fortunately, we had the most amazing casting director, Amy Lippins. And she made that process so easy that it became kind of one of the, like, the kind of joys and highlights of the entire thing, instead of like, you know, something that was stress inducing. She came up with the idea of Lonnie like pretty much right away. We loved him from This Is Us, and then she did a wider audition process for Kevin, and we, you know, saw Ezra early in the process, and we were like, oh well, he's definitely Kevin. And once they met, we were like, yeah, the chemistry's there, this is perfect, and kind of the rest was history. So that seemingly really difficult aspect ended up being something that was that came together quickly, and we're really thankful for it.
I agree.
Yeah, well, they, like I said, their performance hooked me in. It was believable. Their friendship, their concern for each other, their resourcefulness in the face of terror. And there were a couple of moments where Bobby's character did a few things. I'm like, oh no, he hasn't played enough video games. He shouldn't do that. But were there any particular moments that you were looking forward to, excited about, or looking forward to, like challenges with filming or expectations that went beyond what you were hoping for?
There were definitely some sequences I was really excited about. One sequence that did not make the cut, which is unfortunate. But another sequence that I was really excited about was when Kevin has to sort of escape the grasp of one of the kidnappers, and he uses some tools.
A gardening utensil, let's just leave it at that.
I was always really excited about that. And then seeing it now, like literally I just laugh every time because it's just the best.
I will just say that the kidnapper's reaction in the aftermath had me laughing out loud. Oh my goodness. I can't spoil it because it's so funny. It's absurd, the reaction. And I'm like, oh, really?
Right. It's like, they're just shocked. And that was probably like the reaction we wanted. We wanted it to like elicit a laugh, even though it's like dark.
Yeah, I can attest that it's definitely David's favorite sequence. It's definitely one of mine also. There are a few, but that's a good one.
talk about practical effects. There aren't a lot of effects in the movie, but the ones that are seem to be practical rather than digital. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is very accurate. And, you know, that's kind of in combination with our awesome special effects makeup department heads, Gage Munster and Hannah Schneck, and also like just kind of working in tandem with our stunt coordinator, Dennis Madelone, to make sure that everything just looked very real. And yeah, that sequence that we were just talking about, that was really fun. I remember all of us just on set, just like each time we did a take, and Julian especially, our DP, had like the funniest reaction to me. He was just like, oh my god, it looks so real. And he was just like he was just like losing his mind and like cracking up. I mean, those moments, just like watching the effects come to life, you know, you just see it in camera. Like it's you don't have to worry about doing visual effects enhancements at the end. Like, even though there were some enhancements with certain things, but like, really, it's just there when you shoot it, and it was a lot of fun. And yeah, so those were some of the best moments when we got to do things like that. We want to do more of that in our future projects.
Well, I hope you do get to do them. And I will put this out to the media gods right now. This movie needs to be released on Blu-ray with all of the extended scenes, deleted scenes. There has to be a commentary track with you and David. And, you know, what? Throw Lonnie and Ezra in there, too. I need commentary tracks for this movie. Somebody make it happen.
We'll try to make it happen. Lonnie and Ezra are really fun also when they get to comment on things. It's been really fun having them in like interviews and stuff where they do way better than we do. So definitely have fun commentating.
I'll put that out there. Somebody give me a Blu-ray with all of that. Anyway, what are you guys working on something now or just basking and taking a moment's break after the after this?
Constantly working, trying to get something off the ground. It's just still never easy, but we have a lot of projects we're really excited about, and hopefully one of them will break through at some point.
Awesome. So where can folks keep track of you guys online to make sure not to miss your next projects?
We're not the best with social media, admittedly. We're very old school, but we do actually have like Instagram accounts now, kind of recently. I'm at JD Powell 1920. I think that's mine. It's worse than that. I'm not even positive. David, I don't know yours.
Mine is just my name, my Instagram, just my like full name, David Charbonnier. And I have like 20 followers. So
We're in like the same boat. We have like no followers, and yeah, we post like David posts really nice photos at least. So his Instagram seems more like fascinating than mine. Mine, you'll see a lot of my family and my like, especially my niece and nephew. I'm kind of upset with them.
Okay. You need to get more like behind the scenes shots and those really cool auteur director shots where you're staring intently into the camera.
Yeah, we need some of those. We gotta like step our game up. We weren't ready for that. You know, we were very focused on just making the movies and just like just getting these films out there. We're like, we didn't think about any social media aftermath or anything like that.
Well, you guys did an awesome job with The Boy Behind the Door, and I can't recommend this horror suspense thriller to enough people fast enough. It's on Shudder as of Thursday, July 29th, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay, so people who have Shudder, go see it now. Justin, David, thank you so much for your time today and for making this cruelly intensively fun film.
Of
Thank you
course.
so much.
Thank you so much for watching it and the amazing interview.
Yes.
You are very welcome. It was my pleasure. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's surveillance fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama. From heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all. Take a ride with us at escapepod.org and buckle up because it's story time.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ashmore from Sci-Fi's Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
And yes, if you get the chance to see The Boy Behind the Door, I don't think you'll be disappointed. This movie was tense the entire way through, and the way it was shot, some of the composition of the scene, some of the sounds that were used really enhance that little bit of concerned agitation you get when watching a horror movie. And the fact that the two boys, Bobby and Kevin were so easy to empathize with so quickly. Awesome, awesome stuff. And yeah, Lonnie Chavis, who played Bobby, and Ezra Dewey, who played Kevin. Yeah, these... their portrayal was so compelling. Very, very compelling. Very easily roped in to concern about their situation. And as I said during the interview, you could tell these kids did not play video games or watch horror movies enough, because there were some moves there that, okay, they were a kid, they didn't know that, but come on, you're killing me here. But that just goes to how well this movie was done, because I cared, because I didn't want the stupid mistakes to lead to messy deaths. But anyway, is this a movie you think you will check out? I hope so. Let me know. Send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. Or hit me up on Twitter, @sliceofscifi. Start up a conversation. You know I like to gab about these kinds of things. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the website, sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Your feedback really, really helps raise our profile, get the show in front of other people's eyes who may not know about the show. And if you're a member of Podchaser, go ahead and give us a review over there. I'd like to thank everyone who's currently helping to support Slice of Sci-Fi and the other podcasts and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your pledges, your donations really, really do help keep all of these bits flowing and these websites online, so thank you. If you would like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. And if you are a patron, you become eligible for perks. Every month I pick an email address out of the hat, and that person gets to choose from a Blu-ray, a 4K, a DVD, an advanced copy of a book, or a finished copy of a book. Whatever I happen to have on hand, the review materials I'm sent that I can't always keep because I don't have enough space for it all. You get to choose from the good stuff because you are my listeners and supporters. And for that, I thank you and present you with these gifts. And if a donation every now and then is more to your liking, the link to use is paypal.me/scifisummer. And keep an eye out. I am in the process of setting up a Ko-fi page, ko-fi.com, where you can donate every now and then. And hopefully I'll be able to sign up for continuing memberships, recurring memberships over there as well. Still investigating that. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for your feedback and your support. It is truly, truly appreciated. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.